Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
I love you.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Knowledge Fight. I'm Dan.
I'm Jordan.
We're a couple dudes like to sit around, drink novelty beverages, and talk a little bit about Alex Jones.
Indeed we are. Dan.
Hey.
Dan.
What?
When was the last time you lost a game of tennis?
Boy, I don't know if I've ever actually played tennis.
You don't think you've ever actually played tennis?
I think I've played it like recreationally, just fucking around with friends or something like that. But no, I don't think I've ever
you've
played.
You've never like, played like a game.
I've never played a game that actually kept score. Let's say.
Okay.
I had
all
a couple
right.
buddies, my buddy CB and my buddy James Desolation Williams.
Both of them are actually radios.
The two of them, used to play tennis in high school. And I watched them play a couple times.
Yeah.
It was really funny because CB is kind of like a smaller Indian gentleman.
Okay.
And James Desolation Williams is a tall beanpole of a man.
Oh, yeah? Is
so
he?
The two
is
of them
he?
Really funny sort of playing together. But no, I don't. I'm not much of a tennis guy. I think I played racquetball once.
You played racquetball? I don't even know what that means.
It's that one where you're in a little glass enclosure.
Yeah. What even is that game?
I was just messing around at
the
gym.
That's a crime.
Look, my
that game is just a box.
Right. It's for rich people to have business meetings while they sweat.
Exactly.
Or something like that.
Yeah.
But no,
like
I don't,
squash or something.
I guess that means I've never lost a tennis game. So that's inspiring.
That is inspiring.
Yeah, I'm one of the best.
Think of what you can do when you don't do it.
Yeah, look at all these people who have losing records.
Exactly.
Better than them.
Hell yeah.
All right. So, this is a show where I'm one of the best tennis players in the world, and I know a lot about Alex Jones.
And I am marginally better than you at tennis, and I know nothing about Alex Jones.
Right. So, Jordan, we got an episode to do today, but before we get to that, I thought it might be best just to talk a tiny bit about our last episode. Not to put too much of a shitty veneer on our show, but I don't think either of us were happy with it.
No, I don't think so.
Those who, you know, you have people who listen to it, we get into a bit of an argument about whether or not the New York Times should burn their source.
Yep.
Their anonymous source. And I think that one criticism that came back was the idea of like it being an editorial instead of like a journalistic piece, and there's a little bit of a difference there. I still stand by my position that you do much more damage than good by revealing an anonymous source.
Yeah, I too stand by your position. I thought about it a lot, and I was like, ugh, after like calming down, like that was a rough day.
Right.
As far as being alive is concerned.
We're all a little bit out of sorts. There's
yeah.
a lot going on, clouded heads.
A lot
heads.
Going on. Yeah. So I just fucked up, man. That was a bad argument. It was stupid.
I respect your ability to, say so. I don't think any less of you for holding those positions. And I think people, the reason that I ended up leaving it in, even though I don't feel good about it, is that I think that there's a value for people to see that we don't agree about everything, you and I.
Right.
Let's say. And then further,
we do later whenever I'm not furious at you.
Maybe.
Well, it's not at you.
Right, right.
When I'm not furious.
But even beyond that, I think that there's a value to people disagreeing and whether it's like even, if it gets anywhere or not, being able to discuss varying viewpoints. I think that there's something to that. Whether or not it's the best bit of podcasting we've ever done, I'll say no, probably not.
Nah.
And then there's another further value, and this is just about my psychological state, and that is that I feel a great, tremendous amount of anxiety when I put out a product that I don't think is very great.
Okay.
And I don't feel that very often with our show. I think our show generally is something that I'm proud of and I feel really good about. And so there is something to be said for like, hey, we put it out, I don't feel great about it, and I didn't die the next day. So,
yeah.
There's that. Anyway, if that frustrated you a great deal, sorry about that.
Us too?
Yeah. Anyway, onward and upward and onto greener pastures.
Anyways, the point being, don't give in to your bloodlust and fury. That's my advice.
There's an even greater value in you passing that message along
to
people.
Yeah, no kidding.
Speaking of great value, I'd like to give us
True Value Hardware. Are we talking about them?
We have a new sponsor.
We have a new sponsor.
True Value Hardware. No, but we do need to give a couple shout outs to some new donors. Very excited about this. And I'd like to say thank you so much for joining up with the team and becoming a policy wonk. Sarah?
I'm a policy wonk.
That almost sounded like a question because of my elision, because I lost track.
I was a little bit confused.
Lost track of my clips.
Sarah?
No, thank you so much, Sarah. We appreciate it very much. Also, I'd like to say thank you to another person who has joined up with the team. I'd like to say thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk, Steven.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you, Steven.
Thank you very much, Steven.
If you would like to become a policy wonk and support our show, you can do so by going to knowledgefight.com, clicking that support the show button. We would appreciate it.
Indeed you can. That would be nice.
Yeah. So, Jordan, today we are back in 2009.
Hey!
We have passed the point where the Tea Party has gone nationwide with the National Chicago Tea Parties February 27th of 2009.
Whenever people of all shades of white got together to really talk about, what were they mad at? Taxes?
Something like that.
Sounds more like a black guy was president.
We've got some real interesting tax stuff to talk about today, but that's...
Tax stuff?
Yeah,
oh, boy.
I got some stuff I'm very excited to get into.
Okay.
But we need to track this as it goes, so we're going to start where we left off on March 2nd, 2009. And we will get through about March 4th. I'll be honest, we're going to halfway through March 4th. Because
halfway through March 4th.
I turned off the show... and walked away from it.
It got a bit bad.
It's not that it's bad. I was just like, there's a point of surreality that Alex Jones's show gets to at some points.
Okay.
Especially back in 2009. And I just kind of like, I felt high a little bit. I was like,
okay.
I gotta get away from this. Like, his show made so little sense that I'm like, so later I'll go back and listen to the rest of the fourth. And if there's anything else to amend or add as an addendum, we'll do that. But for now, March 2nd through
halfway
through
March
4th. But,
it was the equivalent of, listening to LSD.
Somewhat, yeah. So, we're gonna start, as we generally do, with an out of context drop from, today's episode.
I'll tell you right now that if we make it through this martial law and can back this new world order off, that I do intend to adopt little brown babies.
All right, Alex. All right. Woo. It's a conditional statement.
Wait, what?
Should we defeat the New World
Should
Order?
Should we defeat the New World Order?
Alex.
Which, never we will.
Probably not.
Never.
Even
ever.
Based on his own mythology, there's no way to really defeat them. We could just push them back.
Exactly.
So, but if he pushes them back far enough, he's going to adopt some little brown babies.
So what is it? Is this like every 10 yards he adopts a new brown baby? Is this like a football match? Football match.
Something along those lines. Yeah, very weird. I will say that was a part of where I needed to turn it off.
Yeah, I believe that.
That is.
I believe that entirely.
Yeah. So we'll start here on the 2nd. And I believe the last time we were in 2009, I mentioned that Bob Chapman had been on.
Yeah.
And Bob Chapman mentioned George Soros in passing, and Alex didn't respond to that at all. And I predicted, hey, I bet pretty soon Alex is going to start talking about George Soros.
Uh-huh.
Shockingly. Our first
that fast.
Here,
that fast.
On March 2nd.
Holy shit.
Alex brings up George Soros.
I forgot to even play this last week. I got to pull it up. John, I sent it to you. It's the George Soros clip. Kurt Nemo wrote an article about it. So did Steve Watson. George Soros admits elite plunging oil to bankrupt Middle East. They now admit they're doing it.
So, a couple of very fine points that I think are appropriate to make here. The first is that this is still not his normal George Soros is running all this nonsense. So he still isn't like on the George Soros tip, as, you know, I'm not satisfied with that.
Huh.
But it is really interesting because in this time that we've been covering, and, you know, some 2008 stuff that I listened to before, our coverage of this began, he's not talked about Soros at all. This is the first time that he's brought him up as some sort of an evil, nefarious force.
And he doesn't sound familiar with Soros at all. If you listen to the tone of his voice there, it's like, this guy Soros, pull that clip up of this guy Soros. Who's Soros over here?
Hey, anybody got Soros? What's going on here? And so I looked into it in like, I can't find this article by Kurt Nemo. I searched InfoWars aside. I can't find it. But I did find some interesting stuff about Soros and oil in the end of 2008.
Are you sure you didn't? Did you search InfoWars site for, like, I hate Jews, 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 with a bunch of exclamation points, because I think that would have found it.
I didn't find that.
You didn't find that?
No, but what I did find is this, there's an interesting piece in the New York Review of Books that, goes over, Soros went before the U.S. Senate Commerce Committee oversight, at a hearing on, June 3rd, 2008, and they, give a slightly amended version of all of his comments. And what he is expressing to the House Oversight Committee here is that you look at the price of oil and how it's gone up dramatically at this period of time.
Right.
You see a 90% increase in just 18 months.
That's a lot.
What the situation is at the time. You see an average price of like $2.50 a gallon at the pump go up to over $4 a gallon. He's discussing about how this probably is representative of a bubble. This is a piece of like over speculation. People over trading in commodities.
Right.
Is what's causing this. There's nothing in his speech here, nor any of the other pieces that I've been able to find from around that time of Soros being like, the elites are gonna plunge this shit.
Right.
He's cautioning against the idea that people are, amateur investors, let's say, getting in and hyperinflating the price of oil, and it has nothing to do with the actual supply and demand of what a market would do. And so he's...
What kind of genius could possibly predict that? Dan, that is too brilliant. That's like if somebody were like looking at... I'm just going to choose something from just at random. Mm-hmm. Let's go with Bitcoin. Like if somebody were looking at Bitcoin and seeing that price keep going higher and then buy their own Bitcoin, there's no way that enough people would be able to do that to create this massive bubble. Mm. And no investor would be smart enough to say, anytime a massive bubble is created, there's probably going to be a crash.
Uh-huh.
Too smart. He has to be connected to the elites, Dan. I rest my case.
Well, I mean, there's some really...
Let's just think of housing. That would never happen.
There's some really interesting things that he says within this this address before this oversight hearing that are very counter to what Alex is saying his position is. Here, quote, there is a strong prima facie case against institutional investors pursuing strategy of investing in commodity indexes. It's intellectually unsound, potentially destabilizing, and particularly harmful in its economic consequences. When it comes to taking any regulatory measures, however, the case is less clear. Regulations may have unintended of adverse consequences. For instance, they may push investors further into unregulated markets, such as shiploads of oil, which are less transparent and offer less protection. So he's making an argument that it's, you know, these are the consequences that you see when people get into irresponsible commodity index trading and stuff like that. These are some of the things you can see. It's bad, but... What you also have is a possibility of like, oh, should we regulate this? That might have negative consequences. So even, I mean, all of this seems like stuff that Alex should be okay with. Also.
So you're saying that his speech was essentially, I know this is going to go wrong, but I don't know how to fix it.
No, not at all. I think he does actually know how to fix it.
What did he say?
Well, so he's talking about, quote, I find commodity index buying eerily reminiscent of a similar craze for portfolio insurance that led to the stock market crash of 1987.
I remember that one. I was born in it.
In both cases, institutional investors are piling in on one side of the market, and they have sufficient weight to unbalance it. If the trend were reversed and the institutions as a group headed for the exit as they did in 1987, there would be a crash. Index buying and speculation that follows trends reinforce the prevailing direction of prices and have a destabilizing effect by aggravating the prospects of a recession. The effect will be reversed only when the recession begins to take hold and demand declines, but it would be desirable to rein in index buying and speculation while they are still inflating a bubble. So what you do is right there. His advice is very clear. It would be desirable to rein in this index buying and speculation while there's still a chance to do so.
Yeah, but he also said that he doesn't know if regulation is the way to do it.
But he's not even in that sentence. He's not necessarily advocating for regulation.
No, I know. That's what I'm saying.
Wise investors should start reining it in of their own accord.
Oh, he's cautioning investors.
Yeah.
Oh, all right.
Yeah.
Well, I'm still not okay with that.
Why?
I'm for regulation.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I understand, and I think that maybe there is something to that, but also the idea that it could have unforeseen consequences is also very valid.
Absolutely.
My point is that I find no evidence that George Soros admitted that the elites are crashing oil at all.
Is that where we started?
I only see evidence of him being very concerned about the rise of prices in oil in the late part of 2008 and trying to advise calmer heads and a better way to deal with it.
Yeah, and he didn't even know what was coming.
Now,
Terminator had the rise of the machines next, so
sure.
he never had a chance.
Now, you may think think you know what's coming,
what?
But Alex actually knows what's coming.
Okay.
Well, we know what they're saying they're going to do next. And let me tell you, it goes from bad to worse. Ladies and gentlemen, they are going to destroy the economy, and then right at the point of peaceful revolution with the states taking the nation back and the people waking up, the feds are going to bomb the daylights out of the United States, Israel, and other countries. You can guarantee it. All the intellectual evidence.
Guaranteed.
All the data points, and I have hundreds of them, literally thousands of different systems and ideas and data and past operations and history that I integrate and bring forward. You know, that's when a good police detective, they say, oh, he's got a nose or he's got a hunch. It's not a hunch. It's doing the job for 10, 15, 20, 30 years. It's eating, drinking, and sleeping something. You get a very scary, power of being able to understand what the establishment's going to do.
Except all of those predictions didn't happen. None of that happened. They didn't bomb the hell out of the United States or Israel.
No.
The market didn't crash. It only got better from this point forward.
Yeah.
And by doing the things that he's warning are going to destroy everything.
Right.
The states didn't come in and dissolve the union as he's masturbating, thinking about at this point in his life.
I still
None
argue they should
he's
have.
He's the worst detective ever.
Well, yeah, but I think that myth...
His nose is very off.
But that's the myth of the detective. None of them can do that shit. That's why crimes weren't solved until, like, the 1990s. Nobody knows who committed any crime before we got computers and forensic evidence.
That's a very interesting
stance.
That's
a fact. That is a 100% fact that until DNA...
I think DNA is almost.
No, I know
worse.
DNA.
Okay.
Well, actually, that's probably true too.
At least CSI type shows certainly have in terms of our perception that you're expressing right now.
Oh yeah, absolutely. No, nobody's ever solved a crime.
No.
Actually, I'm going to lean towards that.
Ever. All crimes.
Not one.
Back open.
Every hunch you've ever had, bullshit.
Uh huh.
Oh yeah.
All right.
Yep.
Well, if all detectives are as good as Alex, I say hurrah. Let's reopen every cold case.
Yeah.
And warm case.
Yeah.
Is that what they're called?
Let's let everybody out of let's let everybody out of prison.
Is it called a warm case when it's solved? No, it's not.
No.
It's cooked.
What?
It's done.
What?
No, because a cold case is one that's gone cold. Wouldn't
well,
the opposite
yeah,
be a hot case?
Well, but you didn't even say hot case. You said warm case.
Well, there's got to be a middle ground.
What, a case that's in purgatory? A limbo case?
No, because the cases aren't called frozen cases. They're just cold. Cold, warm. Hot, frozen. Who cares?
All right, what do you got?
In this next clip, Alex expresses some of his views about geopolitics, which is interesting.
All right.
And it's good to take note of this, where we are in March of 2009. This is still where he's at.
Your thoughts on Iran versus Russia. Is this all just WWF fake wrestling grandstanding, or is there really a threat there?
What, of Iran going to war with Russia?
Yes. Do you think that's a possibility?
No. I appreciate your call. You know, they've had some problems in the past, and Russia has tried to take over territory in Iran's mountainous north before.
What?
But it's Russia there that is building their peaceful nuclear reactors. It's Russia giving them a lot of technology, and so I don't see a big issue there. I see Israel with Benjamin Netanyahu striking Iran and starting World War III.
Okay.
All right.
So where we're at, very clearly, Russia and Iran, cool. Israel,
hanging
not
out.
Cool.
Yeah.
So that's where he's at in 2009.
Yeah, in 2009, I think he was probably right on with that assessment, though. Netanyahu was wilding out.
Yeah, no. I agree.
He was our boy Jacob Williams back then.
Just because he may have been hanging out with Nick Cannon at the time. I still think his assessments are wrong just because, like, I do agree that he's much closer to on point in terms of, like, Iran's capabilities weren't offensive. They were it was a peaceful nuclear program. I think he's wrong about Russia quite a bit, but he is more accurate about Iran and Israel at that time, at least the governments of the countries.
Yeah.
So there's that. But the only thing I find really all that interesting is denoting the difference, you know, denoting
the
change. And we're still here. That hasn't changed yet. He also expresses pro net neutrality opinions on these episodes. So that's another thing that still hasn't changed.
Everything is.
We're still waiting on the pivot.
As long as it's anti-Obama, he's for it. Mm-hmm. The moment it's, pro his team. Mm. Of course.
Yeah.
Stupid.
So, he starts to take some calls and, he gets a very interesting call from a guy who reminds him of something that he should not need to be reminded of.
The clown.
George in Texas, you're on the air. Welcome, George.
Hit the clown.
Yeah, just to remind your listeners, today is Texas Independence Day.
Victory or death, my friend. Texas Independence Day. Anything else?
Yes. You know, I was sitting there reading about the Alamo, and I can tell you one thing. I was all inspired because even though they were outnumbered by the Mexican Army, they stood their ground, and they, even though they all died, they would not succeed. They would not bow to a dictator. And that's something that listeners should sink in their minds.
What?
Absolutely. And, you know, they made that watered-down whitewash, kind of demonizing the folks at the Alamo a few years ago, and it was a dismal failure. No amount of media propaganda against those men that died is going to work. And we salute the defenders of the Alamo today. Thanks for reminding me.
You should not need to be reminded of your favorite thing. He's based his entire life on Colonel Travis. That should be his birthday. Texas Independence Day. That's all he cares about.
He's more of a, he only goes to church on Easter and Christmas. You know what I'm saying? Like,
Easter,
hey, come on.
Easter, Christmas, and Texas fucking Independence
Day. You know,
those should be, he should have the Texas Independence Day tattooed on his arm, quite frankly.
He should not need
a caller an hour into his show.
You get busy.
Bullshit.
I love trees. I don't remember Arbor Day.
Well, Arbor Day, but. Fair. But you don't make your whole life about, like, what Arbor Day stands for.
Oh, man. Haven't you heard me refer to myself as an oak 3 million times?
No, but you have, called yourself the Lorax more times than I'm comfortable with. I speak for the trees.
I write it on birch.
So Alex has some guests on this show, mostly unnotable, boring interviews. But he does have an interview with a guy named Professor George Grayson about, the menace that is coming from Mexico. Now, Alex is not so much anti-immigrant at this point, although he is suspicious. He is more concerned about the idea that Mexico is going to collapse, and that is going to lead to everyone spilling over into America from a sort of globalist planned collapse.
I have never heard anybody demonize immigrants before, or even demonize an entire country just in case immigrants come over. That's crazy.
It's still so different than the current day version of it.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
No, like, it's not let's murder them at the borders, but it's still.
The demonization is still so much, at this point, generally, although he may drift into it at times, it's still very different from, like, placing an individual, hey, fuck you, immigrant person.
It's more abstract.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, as far as I can tell, George Grayson doesn't seem like he's crazy. I looked into
interesting.
It. He's a legitimate, you know, he's a professor, and he's an, he's written extensively on cartels.
Okay.
And the Mexican state.
Right.
And so Alex asks him, what I would say is probably his, like, this is the big question, and he might not get the answer he wants.
Let me throw this question out at you. Homeland Security has said in Texas, both state and federal, I've had a state senator and a state rep on in the last week on the subject. Quietly, they say the National Guard is on one of its highest alerts, preparing to even have to shut down the border if they have to, that they believe there is a chance. They won't say on air. They say that's classified, but they say they know the percentage, they claim. But they say a good chance Mexico may completely collapse. From deeply studying this, Professor, do you think that's accurate?
No, Mexico's not going to collapse.
Ooh. That's tough, man. This is your expert here, and he's really, really invalidating your state senators that you've had who have secret knowledge of percentages that they can't say publicly.
When will he learn not to have an actual expert on?
It's tough. I mean, that's right up there with that volcano guy.
Yeah.
Like, no.
Nah.
That's bullshit.
Excuse me, Professor. I am hearing that there will be a real life version of Rainbow Bright brought into this world from a Texas university. Can you respond to that?
Well, based on my book, if you'd read it, I very clearly lay out that that's not going to happen.
Okay. All right.
You know what, though? Like, here's the thing. They were having a perfectly amicable interview up till this point, so Alex probably had every reason to think he's going to say this, and the guy's like, you bet. You bet it is.
Because, just because the guy was polite?
No, not even just the politeness. They were on a similar wavelength about a lot of stuff, about the idea of, cartels taking over patches of territory and stuff
right.
like that.
Right.
Like, a lot of stuff that you can have a coherent conversation about.
Right.
It's just when Alex starts getting into his narratives, then any academic is going to be like, hold on now.
Yeah.
I don't know about that.
It's just like you and me whenever we're having a conversation, then all of a sudden I veer too far into bloodlust and you're going to be like, no, we were having a great conversation up until that point.
Right. And sometimes I'm not wholly prepared to deal with it. And you just keep going. But
I have a hard problem.
But that's fine. So yeah, I agree, man. He shouldn't have actual smart people on the show.
No, it's a terrible idea.
It makes the bubble a lot harder to maintain, you know, like his information war bubble, is very easily pierced when confronted with someone who's not playing ball.
Yeah.
And I think he's learned that lesson in modern day, certainly.
Yeah, he has not had a reasonable person on there in, what, 3 years?
I don't have a timeline, but I'd say that's probably very fair.
Yeah.
I think the last time might have been, let's see.
Was it one of our 2000, was it like a time travel episode in like 2013?
What do you mean?
Was that
Who
whenever,
Dina Dell?
Dina Dell!
No, that was in 2008.
Oh shit, that was way back.
Yeah, that's before
right.
this.
Never mind.
No.
I retract that.
I was just trying to think, like, I don't know, would you call Russell Brand sane? No, not entirely.
Not entirely. I would call him reasonable. Mm-hmm. Often.
Oh, I guess he had Bill Ayers on. That was, but, you know.
That's true.
That was just for a stunt.
Yeah. We gotta get Bill Ayers.
Anyway, also, the other thing, along with, like I said, we're just sort of tracing trends here a little bit. You have Alex being pro-Iran, anti-Israel.
Of course.
As I mentioned, he's still pro-neutrality at this point. He's also still a bit against the military. In this, he discusses how the military thinks of, people of Arab descent. This is very weird.
I mean, Alex, it's ridiculous the way, and see people, a lot of people say, well, hey, you're Muslim and, you know, you're guilty and it's okay. You should be a patriot and let the police come in and spy on you.
No, they say, there's all this about how they love the Arabs and they're not racist or bigoted. Let me tell you, in the military, you're called Hajis.
Right.
And you're not human, and it's a big joke when they just shotgun a little kid, and the kid blows in half. They go, rogue leader, little bastard, look at him crying. Right. I mean, it's just, you know, hey, let's get this family's car and run over it with a tank. And there's video. Ah, look at this family drive by. And it's just like, and these people think that they're going to be safe in a government run by people like this. No, they're going to loot and rob all of us, folks. Criminals are in control.
You are 100% right, Alex. Like I said.
And by the way, they fund and train the military to commit these atrocities, and they put out the Abu Ghraib on purpose. The CIA put that out. That's been documented to make America be hated. And now they're saying America's fault for everything. It's going to implode. A new Bank of the World's going to form. And you understand the mastermind setup of this.
Make America hated again, Dan.
Right. That's what I guess he's saying is the,
that's why in 2016 you vote white, Dan. That way they can't do it to us. Vote white. You get a black president, all of a sudden they're going to mistreat Muslims and then they might mistreat you.
I'm confused.
You get a white president, you're going to mistreat Muslims. Who doesn't love to do that?
I'm confused by that line of thinking, but not so much confused to hear it, sort of being espoused by Alex. Also, I don't know about the idea, like, if I just take a step back, I'm like, alright, so, he's saying that the CIA put out all the information about Abu Ghraib, as a way to make us look bad in the world. I would ask, what else do you want to do? You know, if that's going on, what are you gonna do? I don't want them to not tell the world about that. It's a very serious issue, the abuse of prisoners and torturing people and shit like that. You have to take your lumps.
Right.
No?
Well,
the world thinking that that's bad is good.
But, I mean, at the time, it's kind of like they had nothing to lose because everybody already knew it anyways.
Mm.
Like, the CIA can release all the Abu Ghraib stuff they want in 2009, but everybody in the world was like, you guys are fucking torturing people since 2004.
Well, but I still don't understand Alex's angle on it. You know, like, I don't understand the nefarious piece. And I further don't understand what he would prefer. Like, I don't get what the alternative.
That's a good question.
I don't get what the alternative that he would like is.
America looking good?
I would like for the,
But that doesn't seem like that's what he wants either.
I would like for them to have not behaved that way. That's what I would like. It seems what he would like is, they don't keep that under wraps.
Yeah.
Which kind of flies counter to his whole thing. I don't know. It's very confusing. I don't understand.
It's strange for Alex to be like, the government should have withheld this information from the public.
And I don't understand how it all that tracks from what he was saying, and especially hearing like all this, hey, in the military, they call you Hajis, they hate you, all this stuff. It's like, pretty soon you're going to be talking about how the military is all patriots and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I have my theories, but it's very weird to hear this, like, they're all full of racists and they fucking hate you.
Yeah. You know, like the cops.
Right. Well,
he said that before in 2009.
Yeah.
He's like, anybody who's a symbol of authority in 2009 is associated with a government that's out of control. Whereas now we have a government that is under control.
Well, and then even
for him.
And even before that, he started to get the narrative that there is a counter coup, beneath the surface, against globalist forces within the military and police and stuff like that. But, you know, we talk a bit about, like, why it's important to cover Alex Jones and why it's important to focus on this stuff.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons is because I believe, and I think, a lot of right-thinking people would agree with me in this, that often he is someone who serves as a conduit into much darker things.
Yeah.
Now, on another level, more mainstream things than Alex, say Fox News, those sorts of things, serve as conduits to him, which then lead people further down the hole into like overt white supremacy and white nationalism.
It's like when you get lost on Wikipedia for a while and all of a sudden you're like, holy shit, when did I get into the Boer War?
You never know what you're going to learn.
Yeah.
But why I think that this is something that I would like to bring up at this point is because towards the mid end of this episode, Alex gets a call who actually expresses exactly that, but as a positive thing.
Interesting.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, sir.
Hey, I just wanted to thank you first and foremost for what you're doing for the country, and I believe that you're a patriot for what you do.
Thank you. I'm on
God
a mission.
God bless America.
I'm sorry?
I'm on a mission. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. I just wanted to say real quick that I'm new to all of this. I'm new to politics, and it's been quite an eye-opener. This past election is what got me into it. My mom got me into Fox News at first.
What's different about that election?
One thing led to another. I eventually found your show. And you've opened my eyes to quite a few things. And I listen to a lot of the radio shows out there, just about all of them. And I think you're the best out there because you're speaking the actual truth. The other guys, they're great, but it's like they're scared to talk about what really needs to be talked about.
Or they nitpick a lot of them. There's a lot of great folks, though. Some of them nitpick about everybody else, and it
just because it's fun. Alex complains literally all the time about Glenn Beck.
Yeah.
At this point in his career, he hates Michael Savage, calls him Michael Wiener all the time.
That's because he's a nitpicker. That's all he does, Dan. He just nitpicks. What a wiener.
Well, that's what he's saying is the problem with all these other places.
They're a bunch of wieners with their nitpicking, Dan.
But if you see there, this caller is talking about, like, okay, so my mom got me watching Fox News, and I, you know, started to go down the rabbit hole. Then I found you, And then once I found you, which is mostly like, it's like hardcore drugs.
Yeah.
The other stuff wasn't good enough anymore.
Right.
Because you've convinced me that you are actually the one giving the real truth.
Right.
So then I listen to other people and I think that they're full of shit because you've trained me to think that they're full of shit. This is how indoctrination works. This caller is expressing exactly how the path downward works.
Yeah.
So that's fun.
Dead on.
Yeah, it's a bummer.
I don't like
in the context of like, thank you for doing that.
Yeah, I know. I just found politics, which is like, okay, how did you? All right, fine.
Yeah.
And then I went to InfoWars. Fuck! What?
Yeah.
What, you could have done anything if you just found politics. You were a blank slate.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't know anything could have happened, and instead you wound up going to Alex Jones? Fuck, man.
Well, you know, people who maybe aren't that smart, things filter downwards. And also, Alex Jones is really...
Trickle-down bullshit.
I mean, if you're not paying that close of attention, Alex Jones is really entertaining. So it makes sense that if you accidentally stumble onto him, and you're just kind of like, oh... This guy's blowing my mind.
Yeah, he is. You know? He is more entertaining than Hannity. I'll give you that.
Yeah, no doubt. Especially when Combs was around. Those are dark times with Hannity and Combs.
Oh, that's right. I remember that.
Yeah.
Why did he ever have a co-host? That's
very
a terrible
boring show.
Idea.
They're trying to pretend they were fair and balanced.
Ah, yeah. Then. Oh, those were fun times.
Good times.
When they used to even they at least made the effort to pretend back then. You know.
Right. Right. Which you gotta tip the cap to a little bit, or not.
Do you?
No.
I'm pretty sure you don't.
But you do need to tip the cap to this.
Nice transition.
And that is, we've listened to a lot of Alex's show, he sings along with a lot of music, but we've never seen him become self-aware about the fact that he's singing along.
All right, now I'm
to
interested.
A lot of music on his show.
It seemed like yesterday, but it was long ago. She was lovely. She was the queen of our lives.
Nights.
There in the darkness with the radio playing low.
You are a nitpicker, sir.
All those drifters' days are past me now.
I've got so much more
to think about.
Deadlines.
Deadlines and commitments.
It's the Alex Jones Karaoke Show.
All right.
Brought to you by ColaBlue.com. Against the wind. All right, Burmese.
Yeah.
See, now that's how I wish you would do his ads from now on.
Oh, totally.
Oh, do the Highwaymen and then drop in just like a...
Brought to you by
a
cola.
And we got Easter sales on the way.
Yeah, it's more fun that way.
Yeah, that's way more fun.
Then he's talking... Jason Burmese is in studio, and they're announcing that Jason Burmese is now going to be doing a 9 to midnight show.
Oof.
On the InfoWars Network, brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network.
Uh-huh.
I don't know how successful that was. I don't ever care to find out. Jason Burmese sucks.
Who so. Is Jason Burmese? I've never met this cat.
Yes, you have 100 times.
I have not met Jason Burmese.
Yes, you have.
What are you talking about?
We've talked about him a bit.
What are you talking about?
He's
refresh my memory then.
He's kind of Alex Jones's main sidekick at this point. Like, he's a guy who's made some 9/11 documentaries.
Oh yeah, now I remember.
He's on a bit, but we don't listen to him all that much because he's kind of a David Knighty character.
Yeah.
A little boring. I don't know.
No, that's fine. I remember him now. I remember him now. He's boring.
He's one of his main guys.
He sucks.
Yeah, he does. So that brings us to the end of March 2nd, and there's not a lot going on there. There's nothing really about the Tea Party, nothing really about Soros, except for that first clip.
We got our first mention.
Yeah, so there's that. That's some nice progress, but at the same time, really, there's not.
Yeah, it's boring.
This is a no man's land where we kind of hoped we would find something.
Yeah, we would see an acceleration at least.
And there's not.
No.
So now
we're in a holding pattern.
We go on March 3rd, and we get to Alex talking about some fears that metastasize and become something else a couple of years down the road.
Spiders.
We were told by Walmart managers in 2002 that there was a secret program with Walmart distribution centers and Walmart facilities under martial law to be where people are taken to be given the forced inoculations, and people didn't believe us. Then, 2 years ago, it came out in mainstream news that Walmart was indeed involved in, quote, helping during emergencies with emergency inoculations, and they did drills all over the country. You can Google all of this. You know, Walmart does vaccination drill. Or
okay.
Walmart does emergency preparedness drill. And people pull into the Walmart and drive through and they give you shots. Now, first they did it with jelly beans. They did drills where they would give you a jelly bean as if it was your pill.
Jelly shots.
Then they now have drills where you actually show up for the drill, and they advertise it locally, and the citizens get free flu shots, and you drive up, and the army sits there and injects
How dare they? With the flu vaccine. How dare they give you free vaccinations?
So they're beta testing this and drilling the firemen, drilling the police, drilling the National Guard, drilling the Walmart employees. Other businesses are involved.
So, look. Oh, this is really just misrepresenting the fact that they give out vaccines at Walmart and stuff like that. And they probably have done some drills in terms of, like, you know, should there be a crisis, how can we effectively serve the population?
Smallpox came back. Guess what this huge-ass building is? It's a Walmart. Well, let's vaccinate people in a Walmart because it's a big fucking building.
And then further, you have to consider how many Walmarts there are in America and how many Walmarts are in towns that have no other central meeting place.
Yeah.
Like, if you didn't grow up in a small town, you don't understand that sometimes you live in a town where Walmart is the town square.
It's where I hung out in my small bullshit town.
Yeah, I did. That wasn't the case in Columbia when I was growing up, but Columbia is so close to a lot of small towns. I'd hang out with people who grew up in Mexico, Missouri, Avoz, places like those cities where it's like there's nothing to do except go to the fucking super Walmart. Yeah. So on Friday nights, the kids would all go hang out at Walmart.
It's like a cheap version of being a mall rat. Right. Like, there's just nowhere else to hang out. No, there's no mall.
So the idea that, like, hey, it would be a very strategic, smart thing to do for public health to work with Walmarts to give people vaccines.
Yeah.
Not force vaccines on them or anything like that. But also then you have to...
As opposed to the local Pentecostal church.
So now you have to... Well, not every town has one of those. Most towns do have a Walmart. Maybe not tiny, tiny towns, but
tiny, tiny towns have... They don't need them because they still have, like, you know, snake rituals. So
sure.
They don't need vaccinations. The snakes make them strong.
Same thing. Yeah. But the important thing here is that this brand of fear is exactly what motivated Jade Helm. This is exactly what was behind the Jade Helm fear of a government takeover.
Yeah.
There were all these Walmarts that closed down and people were like, oh my God, that's where they're going to house the detainees when they take over the cities. So Alex, his whole thing in the present has been like, I didn't get on Jade Helm stuff. It's like, 6 years before, you are giving the proto-narrative that led to the Jade Helm fears. So maybe, I don't know, we would still have to go through that period of time to find out exactly what he was saying when Jade Helm 15 was going on.
Our next investigation is...
No more investigations.
Okay.
He's laying the groundwork for the people who did make those conspiracies. So whether or not he was actively involved, he's the granddaddy.
Right.
So that's fun. Anyway.
I mean, hey, look, it's not a terrible idea. If I was going to put a lot of detainees somewhere, I would either surround them with a pit of snakes a la Indiana Jones.
And then they could get their vaccines that way.
Exactly. Or I would put them in a Walmart.
Okay.
You know how easy it is to keep people docile in a Walmart?
Sure.
You never see people freaking out at a Walmart, even at the checkout aisle, because somebody has 12.
Yeah.
Everybody's cool in Walmarts.
There's so many distractions.
Oh,
everywhere.
Yeah. It's easy to contain people there.
Right. You just lock the doors and no one would notice. I don't know if that's true. But I know that this next clip represents...
The greeters would have a very different job. They'd be on the other side of that being like... I'm sorry, you can't leave yet.
Do you want some peanut butter cups? Yeah. They're over there. Just constantly trick people to walk away from the exits.
Everybody will walk away when there's a peanut butter cup involved.
Sure, fire sale on peanut butter cups.
Free peanut butter cups in the back.
So, like I said, I don't know if what you're saying is true, but I know what Alex is going to say in this next clip. Not true. And it's about how popular he is.
We were up here working late last night, and I went and picked up hot dogs from a local hot dog place. That's what the guys wanted.
Dog!
And I go in, and the two people behind the counter were fans of the show. Everybody that came in, three different groups of people that came in while I was there getting hot dogs, they were all fans. Just an example of how big this show's getting and how effective, thanks to you out there spreading the word. And but one guy said, you know, you're kind of down on Obama. Didn't he really close Guantanamo? And I said, no. He'll look at closing it in 1 year, and he has said they're going to continue rendition, secret arrest, and not follow the Constitution, Bill of Rights, or Geneva Convention.
Yeah.
And I gave him some of the headlines. You know, Obama backs Bush on no rights for detainees.
Credit where credit's due.
And I said, just Google that. But, and I had another guy when I was walking down the street the other day, you know, come over and start talking to me and saying, hey, we, you know, I liked when you were on Bush, but it seems like you're even more against Obama. That's because the globalists are making their move right now like never before and endowing him with this godlike, you know, messianic messiah, type system.
None of these people exist. But, yeah, I mean, credit where credit's due. Obama did continue a lot of those negative programs.
Hey, it's a bummer. Should be a black stain on his presidency forever.
But I don't believe those people at the hot dog stand existed. I don't believe those conversations happened the way he's pretending they did.
How big was this hot dog stand
Huge.
That there were that many people
Huge.
Hanging out there?
It's Austin doesn't have a Walmart, so they have a hot dog
so
stand.
So they have a hot dog stand.
Exactly.
They have the town hot dog
it's
stand.
It's the hub of social life. My parents have told me all about that.
Okay,
yeah, absolutely.
Cool.
So, Jordan, there's, like, I've told you, there's not a lot fucking going on these episodes.
Right.
This is going to be a bit of a shorter episode because of it.
Because
of this ends up being, like, Alex plugging the Obama deception. Like,
sure.
As I remember, that clip ends up spiraling into, like, the Obama deception is going to be huge.
Right.
Great. He interviews Mike Rivero on this show, and that's only interesting because, as we know, some point after this, Mike Rivero is going to call Alex a shill for Israel.
Right.
And not be welcome on his show anymore.
Huh.
So that hasn't happened yet. Their falling out hasn't happened. And who else does he have? He has an interview with Richard C. Cook. It's nothing. Then he has...
who is Richard C. Cook?
It's not important.
He's just a guy.
No, he's someone who, as I recall, he wrote about the Challenger explosion and actually got to the bottom of some of that in a very,
really?
Very interesting way. Like,
oh, that's cool as fuck.
Kind of put people's feet to the fire about it.
Yeah.
But Alex doesn't bring that shit up at all.
What? Like, why not?
Because he wants to talk about the globalists.
Wait, but the Challenger disaster is an incredibly fascinating period in American history. That's awesome.
So, but this guy has like a good bit of experience about the economy and like he's fairly knowledgeable. And so Alex, he tries to push a lot of the like they're going to collapse things language with him.
Yeah.
And Cook is maybe a little bit more polite and generous than he needs to be with the conversation. Because when they're talking, Alex is like, they're going to collapse everything in order to have everything be super cheap so they can buy up everything after it's all over.
Right.
And
that's the only way we're going to rebuild the Challenger.
So Richard Cook comes in and he's talking about how, like, historically when things have fallen apart, people are able to buy up resources at a much diminished price.
Yeah, that's never happened with Puerto Rico, but now, as we're talking.
The fact that you can do that when things fall apart does not prove that people do that intentionally so they can later do that.
Right. There are just predators who are evil people who swoop in order to, not necessarily always evil. Some people have done it as a force for good, but let's go with the large majority who are like literal carpetbaggers.
I would be willing to believe that some people have tried to work things towards a collapse in order to buy things up on the other side.
Oh yeah.
But in order for you to get me to believe that that was a larger plan by some sort of coordinated group, you'd need to do a lot more in terms of evidence.
Yeah.
And when Alex brings up like Soros, which he doesn't at this point, but this conversation, had it happened years later, he fucking would.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Also, but he brings up, like, the Rothschilds at Waterloo. That whole thing. That's not true. So, like, when your arguments about the idea of, like, causing a collapse in order to buy things up on the other end, when you hearken back to that, I don't care. I'm not coming along with you for that ride.
Right.
That was based on Nazi propaganda.
Right.
That's not true.
Right.
So, you need to do better than that, and I encourage you to. If you want to, I'll listen. I'll review the evidence, but up till now, there's none.
And it's not like there aren't any actual examples of that. Like, let's just go with Venezuela or Panama or or fucking Hawaii. Like, name any number of these things where a collapse is created in order to purchase all of this shit.
Are you going to prove to me that all those collapses were intentionally created by some sort of outside evil force? Or are you just going to say that that happened, whether or not it was exacerbated by anyone, and then, like you say, predatory forces
we have a store that's called a Banana Republic for a reason. Like, that is a thing.
Right, right.
Like, that's what I'm talking. I'm not saying that it's a large conspiracy that. I'm saying it's a government combining with a private interest in order to collapse a government and then take it over cheap.
Right.
You know, like, that's a thing. Mm-hmm. It's not that it's not a thing. The problem is he's using a non-thing to describe a thing that's a thing. Mm-hmm. Do you see what I'm saying?
Somewhat.
Yeah.
Which I actually think is probably a succinct summation of Alex Jones's sort of intellectual strategy, which is to describe a non-thing by ignoring a thing.
Yeah, that's
there's
right.
a real thing, and he wants to talk about the fake version of the thing.
Right, 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 right.
Which is fun, because that kind of leads us into this next clip.
Nice.
This is the only thing that really was like, oh boy, this is going to be fun. So this is a clip where, first of all, there's a lot of excitement going on here, because this is the first time I've heard Rob Dew on the show back 2009. Alex doesn't introduce him. Rob Dew.
Hey, I love the professionalism of this show.
Rob Dew just shows up after a commercial break, and Alex is like, what do you think about that, Rob? So they have a conversation about stuff, and it's like, all right, this is weird.
I like that.
Rob Dew kind of brings up the Tea Party. He doesn't call it the Tea Party. He talks about tax protesters.
Sure.
Which is fine.
Yeah.
It's close. Alex doesn't seem all that interested.
Tax protesting is boring.
No.
It's lame.
No.
It's not lame?
No, it's not lame to Alex.
Okay.
But he has a very specific group of people that he thinks are legitimate tax researchers.
Dan.
And he names them here.
Dan,
and
I don't want to know.
I swear to God, I would have ignored this entire clip if these names weren't really funny. And then I looked into them, I'm like, holy shit, these people are all lunatics.
Okay.
But man, these names are funny.
Okay.
Yeah, let's go ahead and get Bob Schultz, We the People Foundation. I haven't had him on in about 2 years.
All right.
Let's go ahead and get Joe Bannister on. Let's go ahead and get all the usual suspects on. Tommy Crier.
Yep. Leading up, there's that, the 15th is the middle of the week, so.
In fact, you want to write that down. Just yeah.
Good work, guys.
We'll do producer meetings here on air. Total transparency.
Yeah.
Let's get Tommy Crier on. Let's get Joe Bannister on.
Gotta get him.
Let's get Red Beckman on.
Red Beckman.
Red Beckman?
Let's get, who else should I get on here?
Skip LaRouche.
Did I tell you? Bob Schultz.
Wait for it.
Oh, and let's get Larry Beecraft. Let's get, these are all legitimate researchers and activists who won't get you put in prison. There's a lot of patriot mythology out there, and I wouldn't, you know, go, throw people over cliffs. So I'm certainly not going to have baloney people on the show. These are all legitimate. Yeah, let's set them up for next week.
Cool. Sounds good.
Thanks a lot, buddy.
We'll start doing it.
Appreciate that.
So
good work, guys.
Yeah, when I heard those names, I was like, first of all, I love the names. First, Red Beckman and Larry Beecraft.
Larry Beecraft.
I was like, all right. And then for the idea that he's saying that like there's patriot mythology out there, and you know, I wouldn't steer you wrong by bringing in a crazy person like that. And I'm like, huh.
Right.
Interesting that Irwin Schiff isn't on your list of names.
Hmm.
He's suspicious in his absence. Peter Schiff isn't on his list of names.
Definitely not
of
there.
People who preach against the tax and stuff. So I had to look into it. I had to be like, who are these fucking people? What are they all about? Because some of them rang a little bit of a bell, but most of those names, I was just like, that could be a made up name. Larry Beecraft.
Right.
Are you kidding me?
Do you know what my favorite patriot mythology is? Hmm. It's when George Washington ate those 6 pomegranate seeds, and that's why we have the seasons.
That's why we have winter.
Yeah, exactly.
Because his mom got sad.
Yeah, it's totally right.
So, I'm gonna tell you all about these guys now.
Okay.
This is where my research took me. It was into finding out about these legitimate tax protesters.
The legitimate tax protesters.
So who do you want to hear about first?
It's got to be Red Beckman.
Well, unfortunately, I have to leave him for last.
What? God damn it!
Yeah, sorry.
All right. Then let's go with B-Craft.
Larry B-Craft.
He can't even bring the A-Craft. He's a solid B-Craft, though.
Uh-huh. So, okay, Larry B-Craft is a tax attorney, generally working in the world of defending tax protesters in court. Though he does, it does not mean that he himself is a sovereign citizen. It would be very fair to say that he spent most of his career making money off defending sovereign citizens.
He is currently 0-26 in court cases, but I'll tell you what, he's rich as fuck.
Quote, in 1985, B-Craft tried to defend one client, Jane Ferguson, by arguing that the 16th Amendment, which allowed the federal income tax, was void because 11 state legislatures slightly reworded it before ratifying it. The judge was not impressed by his argument. B-Craft is known.
Now, hold on. Was the judge nonplussed by his argument and yet impressed that he brought the argument, was he not impressed with the argument itself?
The quote is, he was not impressed.
Because the argument seems pretty impressive to go all the way to the 16th Amendment for it.
Well, we'll get back to that here in a little bit. So B-Craft is known in tax protester circles as someone who's willing to try just about any argument in court to see if it sticks.
Pretty impressive.
And possibly because of his willingness to be flexible and try anything, he's one of the only tax protester attorneys who's ever managed to win a case against the government.
Wait, he won one?
This is legendary shit.
Okay.
On October 15th, 1993, Lloyd Long, under representation from Larry B-Craft, was
Lloyd Long represented by Larry B-Craft?
It's a who's who.
What is this?
He was found not guilty in a criminal court on charges that he willingly evaded paying taxes. Since that day, tax protesters have used that case as their smoking gun.
Yeah.
They're proof that they're right, and the courts have followed Long and proved it too. The only problem with their argument is that Long only won his criminal trial, for which the burden of proof involved the government proving that he knew he had to file taxes, and the jury found that he sincerely did not believe that he needed to do so.
We find you not guilty by reason of stupidity.
Yep, and thus they could not rule that he had willingly evaded taxes. B-Craft even makes sure that this is the main issue of his defense in his opening statement. I found an entire transcript of this.
Before you read it, I'm going to try and pre-summate it, all right?
Fair.
Look at how fucking dumb this guy is. Look at how dumb he is. You think he knows he needs to pay taxes? He's too fucking stupid.
I think that would hurt his sort of stature in the tax protester world.
Fair enough.
So,
I was summating.
Yeah. Quote, the question is, did Lloyd Long willfully, meaning with a criminal state of mind, deliberately fail to file his returns? Or did he have an innocent good faith belief, a reason that he's done what he's done? Now that's the bottom line issue.
No, it's not.
So he's even trying to frame it as like, do you think he was really trying to commit a crime here? This guy, you're right. I mean, the insinuation.
Who among us has not forgotten that taxes need to be paid?
The insinuation is like he's too dumb or he's thoroughly convinced of this thing that I'm not going to say is wrong, but we all know is wrong.
Yeah.
So also in civil trial, he was found guilty and he had to pay his back taxes.
Your Honor, who among us can say that we haven't murdered somebody because we sincerely believed them to be a dragon?
Uh-huh.
That's crazy. Do you really think this man committed murder? No. He fought a dragon like a hero.
Well, I mean, he was still found guilty in his civil trial and had to pay all his back taxes.
Well,
which
yeah,
is something
of course.
That the tax protesters mysteriously don't ever really talk about. They just talk about that criminal case and act like he got off with it because Larry B-Craft had come in and proved that the fucking 16th doesn't work and the taxes are all bullshit. It's an excise tax, all this stuff. I read so much stupid tax bullshit.
Right.
But outside of all that, he's not really been too big a player in the tax protester world, but he does pop up from time to time to advance bad arguments that get people thrown in jail pretty regularly. Also, as of this recording, the only post on his blog is just him saying that you can contact him to be your lawyer, along with a picture of himself escorting his daughter across a football field when she was Auburn's homecoming queen. I'm not sure that that's customary. For to be escorted by your father when you're the homecoming queen?
What are his rates?
What?
What are his rates?
To escort the homecoming queen?
Yeah!
I think that's probably pro bono. I think he probably did that one gratis. I don't know.
I doubt it. He charged by the hour.
I don't know.
Those are billable hours, Dan.
I'm going to guess that that was like his idea. I don't know. I don't want to get involved with family stuff, but it seems like he was like, you're the homecoming queen. I'm going to fucking escort you. You're not going to take a boy.
No. Yeah. No. What if that boy pays taxes?
That would be scandalous.
I'd never have that in my house.
All right. So now I guess.
Guess who's coming to dinner? Someone who pays taxes.
I guess we can go next with Tom Crier. Let's go with Tom Crier.
Tom Crier, the town crier.
He's yet another guy who decided not to pay his taxes, got in trouble for it in 2007, then in court pleaded, quote, "I sincerely thought I didn't need to do that," using that as a defense in order to get out of criminal trouble. His story is the absolute run-of-the-mill for idiotic tax protesting in that world. You have a bad argument. You rely on technicality to stay out of prison. You end up losing in civil court. You get forced to pay your back taxes. You pretend that civil case never happened and then make tons of money in the tax protest circuit preaching that people should do the exact same thing that you got in trouble for in the first place.
Fine. You don't have to go to jail, but you still owe us this money. Please pay it.
Basically.
Yeah.
And they all hide behind that same thing, that, like, I sincerely believed this stuff.
Right.
So you don't have to go to prison, but then you still have to pay everything back. That's
how long did they get away with
it? Dude, that story is so regular.
It's legion.
From all of the stuff that I looked into, it's all people wiggling their way out of prison for the crimes that they very clearly committed.
Yeah.
And that's why people like Erwin Schiff are super rare, because he is like, I'm not going to bend on this.
Yeah.
All right, you got to go to prison.
You can't be a believer.
Right.
Yeah.
And so they end up just being forced to pay their back taxes.
Right.
But because of the publicity they gain, they can shift the perception and make it like, I stood up to the man, and then just not talk about the civil trial.
Right.
So Tom Crier died in 2012, and in the years just leading up to his death, he decided to not pay his taxes again.
Well, what are you going to do?
He can't
take it with you, Dan.
He did not agree that he owed back taxes, and he was very clearly did owe them. And he further thought that he shouldn't have to pay any penalties for wasting everyone's time in court with long debunked and discredited bullshit theories. The IRS said they owed him just the north of $1.7 million.
Damn!
Whereas Tom Crier believed that the number should be...
Four.
Nice round number, let's say.
Ten.
Zero.
Come on, man. You got to compromise. Give him like 50. Give him a good 50.
No.
Bring a $50 bill into court. Everybody will be fine. Settle.
So let's talk Joe Bannister.
Joe Bannister.
That's a hot name. That's.
You know what? I don't find Joe Bannister as charming as you do.
If you were making like a, I think that's a pretty good like cop name for
your, you know what? You're right.
Detective Joe Bannister.
Now that you've recontextualized it, I'm in.
Well, it's interesting because Joe Banner is a former IRS agent who turned into a tax protester and is, if by some sort of magic, ran afoul of tax law in some very serious ways.
So you could say he slid down into the,
Right. It seems like he probably had some of these ideas even before he ended up leaving the IRS.
That's a weird thing to be in the IRS.
So it appears he didn't file his taxes between 2002 and 2006 and ended up getting in some pretty big trouble about that. Bannister's first real run-in with the law, though, regarding his tax beliefs, happened in 2004, when Bannister was charged with conspiracy to defraud the United States, as well as three counts of aiding and assisting the filing of false tax returns. A man named Thompson for the 1996, 1997, and 1998 tax years.
He had one name like Cher. His name was just Thompson.
Nope. That was just how I pulled the quote out of the Department of Justice press release.
Okay.
The issue had to do with a client he was advising named Walter Thompson, the owner of SenCal Sales, a luggage manufacturing business. Thompson, possibly due to Bannister's advice, stopped paying his employees' income and employment taxes and also stopped filing necessary paperwork for the employees to be able to pay their taxes correctly.
Ha-ha! Fooled ya!
You're right. He fucked these people over.
You'll never catch me!
He fucked those employees over pretty bad.
Did he also leave riddles instead? He just sent IRS just, you'll find my money when you answer me these questions three.
So from that press release from the Department of Justice, quote, "The indictment further alleges that there was a second meeting on October 11th, 2000, at which Thompson and Bannister again falsely advised SenCal employees that the compensation which they received was not, quote, income, and that they were not required to pay individual income tax on those wages."
I'm sorry, what now?
Hold on. Bannister assured the employees of SenCal that Thompson would not lie to them regarding tax issues.
I'm sorry, what now?
So it has to do with this idea that, like, a lot of tax protesters believe that the only people who, the wording of the laws, the federal employees are the only people who have to actually pay taxes, and the money you're paying isn't actually
okay.
classified as income.
All right.
It's all a mess.
All right.
I mean, we could be here for another 6 hours.
I'm gonna be honest. There's gotta be a little bit of that on you. If I went to an employer and they were like, no, don't worry about it. What I'm paying you is an income. I'd be like, you guys. I don't think I should work here.
I might report them. You know, I might be like, they're giving out very bad advice. But if you're someone who maybe trusts authority implicitly, something like that, they could really have screwed some people over with like, well, they said it. I mean, that guy worked for the IRS.
Why
shouldn't I believe him?
That's the only time in court that I would accept the, I'm way too dumb to have known I was supposed to pay taxes on this. Look at that fucking guy. Well, he was my boss.
Well, and then even beyond that, let's take another step and say that, like, no matter what these employees believed or didn't believe, this guy, Thompson, maybe because he believed what Bannister said, stopped paying their employment taxes.
That's not good.
And stopped filing these quarterly reports that needed to be filed in order for the employees to file their taxes.
Paperwork
is
hard.
So he's just, like, administratively fucking these people over.
Yeah.
Whether or not it's all because of Bannister is a whole other issue. So.
Yeah.
Of course, the issue is never just that these people don't pay taxes. And if you think the money that they saved by not paying employment taxes went to the employees' pockets, you're fucking high.
I believe it.
That's
ludicrous. I absolutely believe it.
So these people always end up getting greedy. In amended tax returns they filed, they were trying to make the tax liability for the business $0. And reflect that they were entitled to a refund of $65,000 for both 1996 and 1997.
Right.
So they're trying to scam the government of money so they'd get $130,000 from the government. So
not only do I not owe you any money, you, sir, owe me money!
So Thompson was found guilty and sentenced to 72 months in prison. Bannister, however, was acquitted because he's a member of a very specific group of assholes, the promoters of a false and criminal ideology.
Tubal Cain.
Jay Atkinson, a tax lawyer who studies tax protesters, told the New York Times, quote, "It's hard to convict promoters. Promoters make a lot of money off their marks, watch their marks go to jail for not paying their taxes, and then take advantage of a loophole that lets them prepare bogus returns that they characterize as protest returns prepared at the direction of the client."
What?
Yes.
How does that, what?
So, he can get away, Bannister, as an advisor to the person who is not paying the taxes,
can get away
by pretending that, like, oh, we were doing this to sort of ask a question of the IRS.
It seems like somebody should have stopped that by now.
Or I can get away with it because I'm the accountant or whatever, and I'm just doing this at the direction of the client.
He's really the one, don't think that's
he's
okay.
He's the one who's evading the taxes.
I'm just filing things
that he, at his direction. So he
then you're a bad accountant.
He ends up getting to slither away. People like Bannister could profit off this weak shit, and he knows that when everything falls apart, he can hide behind even weaker arguments to pretend that he was either just doing something not intentionally criminal.
I was off planet at the time.
At the direction of his client. So he can just say, like, they made me do it now. Legitimately fuck people like him. In 2008, he was also found to have fraudulently filed his own taxes and owed the IRS tens of thousands of dollars. He tried to appeal the decision, but the appeals court upheld the lower court decision. He tried to take the matter to the Supreme Court, but they recently said, no thank you.
You can't buy your own bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do it. If you're gonna scam, you can't then scam yourself.
So now
that's just a bad move.
So now we're 3 for 3 on people. Well, I guess Larry Beecraft, I'm not entirely sure if he actually evaded taxes himself, but okay, 2 for 3 people who actually just like,
put it
into practice and then cowardly hid from the consequences of their actions. Now, Bob Schultz. Surprisingly,
Bobby Schultz.
Bob Schultz is another guy who doesn't pay taxes.
Oh, that's great. Wait, what?
Yeah.
Is he part of our murderer's row of non-taxpayers?
Yeah. Bob Schultz is a little more interesting, though, perhaps only because he's a perfect example of how these scumbags are con men deep down, even more than they're driven by principles. Bob Schultz started and ran the We the People Foundation for Constitutional Education. He was the president, vice president, and pretty much every other important role in the company.
I feel like you shouldn't have that many roles.
It was run out of his house, like all reputable tax protest advocacy groups who have been given tax-exempt status do.
Wait, what?
He had tax-exempt status.
What? Now, how did he get tax-exempt status?
Over the years, Bob used We the People to put out his anti-tax views and lead a lot of people down the wrong paths, making a lot of money off it all the while. Eventually, once Obama was in office, we the people pivoted from being a solely tax-based group and began spouting racist conspiracy theories about how Obama wasn't a citizen. Schultz used WTP money to buy full-page ads in the Chicago Tribune on December 1st and 3rd, 2008, claiming that Obama had not proven that he was a citizen and therefore could not be president. And that would have been fine.
You know...
It would have been fine, legally speaking.
When you're running a scam, just keep your head down. Just keep your head down. Don't attract attention to yourself.
Bob would not have gotten in trouble for any of that. He would be happy as a clam making nonsense accusations if he'd just paid his taxes.
Mm.
His personal taxes.
Oh, no.
We the People was tax-free, which made it a perfect place for him to hide his money. Court documents reveal that he had made personal unsecured loans to WTP of over $100,000, and he practiced sole discretion over how the entire organization operated. In short, the court found that Bob Schultz was using his tax-protesting, tax-exempt organization as a, quote, abusive tax shelter. On July 12th, 2018, his request that a case against him for tax evasion using the WTP as a front be dismissed was rejected, and he will, in all likelihood, end up being in prison before too long.
You know, you can legally hide your money.
Sure.
You know, you could just put it in some sort of offshore bank account.
It's more.
You don't have to take a stance.
It's more fun when you have a tax-free organization that you can use as a.
I know. It's like you're shaking your ass in front of the government. I get it. Uh-huh. You're like, I hate taxes. I'm going to create this tax-exempt business, and then I'm going to put all of my money in there. And that's kind of like a big middle finger to the government. Fuck you. Mm-hmm. See, look, I outsmarted your 16th Amendment or whatever that is.
Right.
Like you guys, what? How many more amendments are you going to have? Huh? We should have stopped at 9.
No, they need the 10th. They're big on the 10th. I mean, Alex had two guests on earlier to talk about his fucking love of the 10th. So now we come to Red Beckman.
Anything before the 13th for these. I think that should be the rallying cry for these white. Instead of blood and soil and all that stuff, just be like, any amendment before the 13th.
Right. I think they do. I think they do that.
Yeah, that actually sounds right. You're right.
So, Red Beckman.
Red Beckman.
Martin.
The headliner of this murderer's row.
Martin Red Beckman is the granddaddy of tax protesters. Okay. His 1985 book, The Law That Never Was, The Fraud of the 16th Amendment, is one of the primary drivers behind the tax protest movement, despite the fact that claims made in the book have been repeatedly deemed to be fraudulent by courts. Though the tax protester movement existed since long before The Law That Never Was, this book led to a renaissance of idiots thinking they know something about the law.
Cool.
Beckman and his co-author, William Benson, present the argument in their book that the 16th Amendment was never ratified, and therefore people don't have to pay taxes. The courts have reviewed the argument and found it to be so baseless that they have legally classified the argument as frivolous. So, you get hit with a penalty for just trying to make this argument in court.
That's like what's her fucking France? Like, she's legally a fascist.
Mm. This is legally frivolous.
Yeah. This is legally the dumbest shit we've ever heard. What do you mean? You can't just argue that an amendment wasn't actually ratified. What's that? What argument is that?
Well, Benson claimed he did a bunch of research and found, like, the versions that were ratified had punctuation in different places and stuff like that. And therefore.
Aha!
And then he also makes a ton of claims about, like, the various states and, like, they said that they ratified it, but they didn't.
This signature was made by a reptile, sir!
And then the courts have looked into all of the claims and been like, that's not, no, that's stupid.
Yeah.
So, like, all of the arguments that people make is like, no one will look at his stuff. And, like, originally when his arguments started to be used to defend people who got arrested for not paying their taxes, they did review that evidence and found it to be lacking. So naturally, William Benson was arrested for not paying his taxes on over $100,000 of income and was found guilty and sentenced to 4 years in prison. He tried to appeal and in the process insisted that he should be allowed to have a hearing on whether or not the 16th Amendment was ratified correctly. The appeals court was not super into that, saying in their decision, quote, Benson is wrong. In Thomas, which is a previous court case about this very same issue, we specifically examined the arguments made in The Law That Never Was and concluded that Benson did not discover anything.
Your Honor, I would like to challenge the 16th Amendment on the basis of fax machines didn't exist, and so everyone had to transcribe it themselves.
In 2007, the United States District Court for the Northern District of Illinois ruled that the claims that Benson made in his 16th Amendment Reliance Program, which is something he was selling.
16th Amendment Reliance Program?
Yeah, it was something he was selling in order to like get people to be like, this is how you get out of paying taxes. Much like your...
$25 for a laminated card,
exactly.
Baby.
It's stubble buying all over again.
Oh, hell yeah.
So they decided, they found that selling this 16th Amendment Reliance Program constituted commercial fraud. He was profiting off giving people specifically fraudulent advice. The court ended up deciding that he could sell his book because that was covered by the First Amendment, but that he had to stop selling his packages online, some of which cost up to $3,500.
Oh, Red.
This
baby.
This is William Benson, his co-author on the book, The Law That Never Was.
I was going to say.
This so far has all been about
shoot
William
for the
Benson.
Moon, baby.
This has been about Benson because he's the easier one of these two to get into. William Benson is a fanciful tax-protesting idiot. Red Beckman is a monster in human disguise. For instance...
So we have our Roger Stone versus our Alex Jones.
Here's a choice quote about the Holocaust from Red Beckman's book.
No, I don't need it. There's no choice quote about the Holocaust other than like, boo!
His book was called The Church Deceived. Here's a quote. Quote, it was judgment, not Holocaust. The true and almighty God used the evil Nazi government to perform judgment upon the evil anti-Christ religion of those who had crucified the Christ.
Bad.
They talk about the terrible Holocaust of Hitler's Nazi Germany. They are still with us today, still worshiping their god Satan, and they're still stealing from the people.
Wrong.
They're the ones who schemed and conspired to create a Federal Reserve banking system.
We went from the Holocaust to the Federal Reserve is fine?
Well, no, he's...
Or is evil?
Yeah, because he's saying that the Jews conspired to create it. That sounds a lot like what Alex implies and is unwilling to do because he hides behind the term globalist.
So if I understand correctly...
Right.
The Jews created the Federal Reserve.
I think that a lot of people who side on Alex's side of things do think that.
It's
the same thing. I'm
fine with it. You know what? Look, you want to say bullshit like the Jews killed our savior, whatever. At least there's some kind of like words, not just like, you know what? The Jews killed all the unicorns. Uh-huh. Why not? Let's just blame the Jews for everything. That doesn't make any goddamn sense.
These people do.
That is true.
Red Beckman believes that people of color are, quote, mud people and has a long history of speaking at white
supremacists. And who creates mud people, Dan?
I don't know. Why are you
who
yelling
creates
at me?
Golems?
Why are you yelling at me?
Who creates golems, Dan?
Stop yelling at
the
me.
The Jews!
Stop it. Also,
he thinks that the Jews are responsible for colored people.
He has a long history of
which
speaking.
Which is his phraseology, not mine. Apologies.
He has a long history of speaking at white supremacist gatherings. Alex should know that. He has every reason to know that in 2009 when he's talking about having him on as a legitimate expert. So in 1994, Red sued a whole bunch of people, including Alan Greenspan, in the U.S. District Court of Montana because back in 1977...
That's a good place to sue people.
In 1977, because he didn't pay his taxes, there was a lien placed on his house. He just decided, fuck it, I'm still going to stay here, even though they're trying to take away my property. And then he got everything like tangled up in court, and he didn't have to leave.
Was he in Montana?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Who's gonna kick you out of your place?
So he stayed there for years and years and kept tying up the courts with frivolous suits to try and postpone things.
Yeah.
And then in 1994, things sort of came to a head. That case when he was trying to sue Alan Greenspan and a whole list of other people seems to have a little bit of a sense of finality to it. And his case did not go great. Red's argument largely boiled down to sovereign citizen lines about him not being a person and shit like that. Freeman on the land kind of stuff.
Your Honor, I am allergic to bees and therefore I am exempt from taxes.
Sure. He ended up being evicted from his land. And in the lead up to his eviction, when he was not going to leave, militia and white supremacists came out to support him, declaring, quote, no more Wacos. When asked about things, he told the media, quote, this eviction isn't going to go the way the law enforcement plans.
I don't like that.
There's going to be enough guns here to make sure of that.
That's not the way you should say things.
Spoiler alert, the eviction did go the way the law enforcement planned.
How many guns were there?
Plenty, but he got kicked off and they burned down his house.
they burned down his house?
Well, the people who owned the land.
That seems, you don't need to burn it down.
They did, because they were going to build something on it. It was either that or destroy it or whatever. I don't know.
Okay.
I'm not going to squabble.
Because I immediately saw the police carrying torches.
No, they said no more Wacos. This was long after. This was long after he had vacated the premises.
Okay. I just saw you put those in the same sentence together.
I understand why that could be kind of confusing.
So, the eviction went exactly as planned. They burned his house to the ground.
Well, later. Again, later. So, we have this list of dudes. Bob Schultz, Tom Cryer, Red Beckman, Joe Bannister, and Larry Beecraft, who Alex says are legitimate tax researchers. I think we've shown they are not.
Yeah.
These are mostly crazy sovereign citizen adjacent or legit sovereign citizen dudes who have failed over and over again to make arguments in court that they shouldn't have to pay taxes and have largely gotten in big trouble because of it.
Exactly.
And some of them have been told, you can't preach the things you're preaching because it's legally fraud. So
I'm going to go with Bannister is Mr. T.
Okay.
Beckman is definitely face. Come on.
Hannibal.
Beckman's Hannibal?
Sure.
Oh, okay. All right. Who's our face?
Beecraft.
Beecraft is our face?
Yeah.
I don't know what he looks like.
He's the only one who successfully did one
of
these.
Oh, you know
cases.
What? You're right. You are crushing the A-team.
I don't remember who the fourth member of the A-team is.
I don't need a... we don't need to worry about that.
And we have two other dudes anyway, so it'd be tough to fill out the team. So, like I said, so that brings us to the end of March 3rd.
Yeah.
And it's just fun, first of all, see Rob do up in that piece. And then the idea that, like, Alex thinks that there are people who are less reputable than these five who he refuses to have on the show.
Well, of course.
That's amazing to me.
Of course. This is the A-team.
You couldn't have a goofier...
With a B-craft.
You couldn't have a goofier troop than these assholes. They're all crazy and very wrong. So it's
Dan,
fun.
They are a ragtag band of heroes ready to infiltrate the Death Star?
They're not.
Of the government.
So,
and, yeah.
Like I said, we're going to touch on a little bit of the fourth here, just because I didn't want to end on that, like, laundry list of tax protesters.
Yeah, but they are fun.
So here's what happened for the first bit of the fourth. Alex is like, he's mad at Glenn Beck.
Yeah.
And I think that has a piece of the Tea Party stuff brewing.
Sure.
A little bit. He's starting to get much more frustrated with Glenn Beck.
Yeah.
But it doesn't really go anywhere. He's kind of mad about the idea that Glenn Beck is talking about the FEMA camps and being like, I gotta research this. I don't know if I can. And Alex is like, that's my bread and butter, you son of a bitch.
Right.
So he gets on air and he's like, I'm gonna spend a half hour proving the FEMA camp. You know what though? Whenever I try and do that, I just have too much evidence. And so
that is something I hear all the time from people with all the evidence, Dan.
He's like, I've got so much that I can't do this.
You can't even talk about it. There's too much evidence.
And so I'm like, are you going to try?
No.
And instead,
you don't need to say any evidence.
Instead, what he does is he starts complaining weirdly about abortion stuff. And talking about how, like, if you're sorry, you can repent and all this stuff. Not mentioning his own history with abortion.
Of 10.
Right.
Plus.
Not talking about all that. Just gets really weird. He mentions a story, he says it's from the Miami Herald, about an abortion doctor who threw a baby up against the wall and then threw it in the garbage and rats ate it for a couple days while the baby was still alive. I found that Miami Herald article. None of that is in there. None of that
he
is in
there. He
threw
a baby up against the wall like the baby owed him money?
Yeah. Yeah, more or less. He's trying to shake down this fetus. The instance in that Miami Herald story he's talking about is absolutely a poorly run abortion clinic.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
They happen.
There were indications that what they were doing was malpractice, and they do deserve to run afoul of the law and be punished for it. But all the editorializing about throwing the fetus against the wall and rats eating a baby who's alive in a trash can for days.
Really don't think a baby could do that.
Impossible, and not in the article. Can't find that anywhere except Alex's weird brain. But it sends him down a fucking crazy path. He ends up, like, he said he was going to get into the FEMA camp stuff, but didn't have enough time.
He has so much evidence.
Then he spends 20 minutes talking about how great he is.
Well, the rat ate that baby, and who is greater than the guy who covers the rat-eating babies?
That might be the Byzantine path his mind went down. But it's just about, like, glory will come when we defeat globalists. That's when he had the clip where he's talking about, once we push them back, I'll adopt these brown babies.
Sure, sure.
And I'm just listening to this. I'm like, you said you didn't have time. This is 20 minutes, man.
He doesn't have time.
You don't have time to prove the thing that you're mad about. What are you doing?
All right.
And so I just got so confused, I had to walk away from it. I was just like, I can't do this. I can't. It makes no sense. If you want to prove this, instead of doing this weird psycho rant that clearly is motivated by him getting into this topic that he knows he feels guilt about but doesn't want to process that guilt.
Nope.
So he does this rambling diatribe about nothing.
Uh-uh. No, it's like, you know how when you studied really hard for a test and you know everything about that test, but you have a little bit of insomnia. So the night before you know, you don't really sleep. And then the next morning, even though you know all the answers to this test, you can't stop thinking about drawing this, incredible, album art for Metallica's most recent album.
Mm-hmm.
That is a thing that happens to everybody. So sometimes you're gonna prove that the government is destroying everybody's lives with FEMA camps,
uh-huh.
But you get a little distracted and you start talking about rats eating a fetus, and then where do you go from there other than I'm the greatest there ever was?
Sure.
That makes sense. Yeah, come on.
So there's one clip that I wanted to play from this episode of the part that I watched, because I think it's indicative of a couple of interesting things that we're still tracking in Alex's history. And, like, we'd be here all day if we were gonna talk about his, like, break down that 20 minute stupid rant. And it's nothing he hasn't said before, which is the other thing. It's also just boring.
So, I am the baby that is being metaphorically eaten by the rats of Texas.
If he did go down that route, I would probably have played it. Because that at least would be like, ah, interesting.
Oh, all right.
It was just all, I'm great, globalist, bad, whoopty shit.
Yeah.
So he's in this clip, there's two things that he brings up that I think are important in terms of us following a coherent path through 2009.
Right.
Somebody who does something similar is Michael Wiener Savage. The real name is Michael Wiener. You know, he'll say, yeah, there's a new world order, a global government. It's run by the Arabs, and we've got to counter it. So they do this very simple bait and switch. And then I saw a clip yesterday. Now I've seen several others where Glenn Beck is on the air saying, yeah, I keep hearing about these FEMA camps, and I'm going to have to investigate them and find out if they're real. Then he makes a joke and says, but Fox News won't let me cover it. Because I'm controlled, it's controlled, conspiracy theory, and then makes a joke. So he brings up FEMA camps that are openly admitted, openly all over the news, and then he acts like he's the only person talking about it, then he makes a joke about it, and then next cuts to Vladimir Putin is going to attack us, and we've got to learn to, you know, single out evil, and Russia wants to go after the United States. Meanwhile,
I'm petty.
As you know, on 888 last year, a sneak attack was launched against Georgia. And then Russia came in with forces, and World War III almost commenced. It's just incredible propaganda.
It is. That Alex saying that, describing the sort of Russo-Georgian war that way, is very clearly indicative that at this point, he is hook, line, and sinker believing the Russian line on
stuff. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Because what happened in that conflict is not at all the way he's describing it. They were separatists in the Abkhazian region in South Ossetia, who started attacking Georgia. They started attacking ethnic Georgian villages and started ethnically cleansing Georgians out of those areas in Georgia's sovereign territory.
Right.
So what ended up happening was Georgia started fighting back against those separatists who believed themselves to be closer aligned with Russia. Russia came in and started fighting as well on the side of the separatists. And then eventually they reached some sort of an agreement, and the war ended.
Yeah.
So, I mean, look, the conflict in Georgia was more complicated than we're giving it service. But the idea that the way Alex is describing it, with Russia being the good guys in it, it's not. There's very clear indications that the South Ossetians and the Abkhazians were acting in Russia's interest in order to annex parts of Georgia back into the Soviet Union.
When was the last time that Russia was the good guy in any kind of action towards consolidating the old Soviet Union back into Russia?
Oh, also, they have occupied Abkhazia and South Ossetia.
Nah,
since then,
come
which
on.
Which is in direct violation of the ceasefire agreement.
Hey!
So, I don't know, man. It just seems like another instance of, you know, Russian incursions that Alex is... you know, taking the Russian line on, which, I mean, is fine if you want to, but be more upfront about what you believe is truth. And what he believes is truth is that Putin's the good guy who's going to save us from the New World Order. And he's clearly believed that since 2009 and probably before. Now, what's interesting about that, and the reason that I think that this is something worthwhile to bring into our sphere of this investigation, mm-hmm. is because it's not a part of whatever change he makes. You know what I'm saying? Like, all the other stuff is still different.
Yeah.
The anti-military stuff, the pro-net neutrality stuff, the anti-Israel, pro-Iran, business. All this stuff is very different than where he will end up being. But the Russia stuff has always been there.
Is it just because the idea, he thinks Russia is a white ethnostate? Is that what it really is?
I mean, in 2015, when he was talking all that stuff about how, like, Putin may save the world and shit like that, when he was talking about that, I mean, he talks about it as being, like, a masculine state. And
right.
there's, like, a testosterone to it. I think he believes that.
Right, like, you can still murder gay people in Russia.
I think that he thinks that it's close to a Christian state. I think that he believes that.
Which is crazy.
But yeah.
Cause he doesn't respect any, like if he looked into Russian Orthodox Church, he would be like, oh no, never mind.
I think he believes those sorts of things on a baseline level. And then further, I think he sees, Russian media being very, accommodating to his anti-Western viewpoints. And there's different reasons. Like, I know that Alex is for quote unquote the West now, but Alex is anti, quote, New World Order.
Yeah.
And Putin and his circle are anti-Atlanticism, anti-the Western Europe and the United States.
Right.
Having any kind of strategic alliances that don't allow them to encroach on their neighbors and what have you.
Right. Isn't that weird?
Right. But so Alex sees, Russia being willing to have him on as an expert in things. He sees Russian media saying very similar things to what he's saying. He doesn't understand that the reason for that is they're interested weakening the alliances that the United States and Europe has. He thinks, like, oh, yeah, this is they know about the globalists. They're on the same team.
Just flattery? I just have a hard time believing that.
I think it's partially flattery, partially, like, twisted familiarity, perhaps. Like, he sees a lot of his worldview mirrored in them, not realizing the reason that it's mirrored is because both are destructive to a status quo.
Hmm.
Maybe.
I don't know.
That's just a theory.
That just seems too little. For the amount of water that he carries for Russia, that just doesn't seem like enough, you know?
But I don't know if he's doing that much carrying now. I think it might be the sort of thing that grows over time.
Could be.
I think that that's probably the case.
Eh.
I don't know. It's weird. So anyway, this brings us to the end of our little jaunt here through 2009. I apologize in some ways that this is kind of like, it's not satisfying in terms of like what we're looking for, but it is what it is. I like the idea that we got to learn about these weirdo tax people.
Those guys were great.
That to me makes things worthwhile on some level.
They're the heroes of this episode, to be honest.
And then we can see like these trends that-
Of course not of their own life stories.
We can see these trends that have already been established in earlier 2009, certainly continuing. We see no pivot. We see Alex not be interested at all, almost a week now after the tea parties.
Yeah.
Not really interested in any way in it except for a rising sense of disapproval of Glenn Beck.
Yeah.
And I think as Glenn Beck's star starts to rise.
And, of course, Michael Wiener.
Michael Wiener.
Not Michael Savage.
Nope.
Michael Wiener Savage.
Who Alex will very soon be saying is a hero of the
anti-globalist. He's a great man.
He's one of the best. He's one of the first people who is saying these things.
Look, his name is Wiener. What are you going to do? He's a Wiener.
So, yeah, I mean, it's interesting.
With his nitpicking.
I mean, we'll see what happens in the near future for now. I'm not super interested in Alex's present day situation. You know, he's been kicked off Twitter and now kicked off Apple, iTunes app.
Yep.
He's been kicked off.
Yep.
I mean, we're just going to see, we'll see what happens, but it's not all that interesting to me. Because I think we could get very easily too much into the world of sort of Schadenfreude and rejoicing in his pain. And I know it's easy to feel that and it's fun, but I don't think it's productive.
Yeah, I think I'm actually past it this time.
I think it, you know, let him wash down the drain and then become whatever he becomes. And in the meantime, I think it's far more interesting to see what happened.
Let him slide down the Joe Bannister, you know what I'm
saying? Indeed,
indeed. Yeah, there we go.
So if you like our show, please, you can check out our website, knowledgefight.com.
Do we have a Twitter account, Dan?
We do. Knowledge_fight.
Were we banned forever?
Nope.
No, still we weren't. There. Oh, shit.
And we're living proof that you can talk about Alex Jones and the ideas that he puts out into the world, and you will not get banned. You'll get banned if you cause very serious harm to people and invade their privacy and slander folk.
Which we try not to do.
Try not
and if
to.
You would like to hear us not do that, you can go to iTunes. Yeah,
also, with the supporting of the show, we really appreciate it. I have gotten word or the sense that one of the problems might be that we don't have any goals up on the Patreon page.
Oh, do we not have any goals?
Well, we had two initial goals. One was...
I thought our goal was just rent.
Well, we had two goals up, and the two of them were goals that we just went ahead and fulfilled before we even hit them.
Oh, that's true.
One was a live show that we did two of now, and then the other was breaking down one of his documentaries, which we did with Endgame.
Right.
And I realized, like, I didn't know what to do with any other goals. But I think people feel inspired by it or whatever.
People like a goal.
And so I've set two new goals.
Yeah.
On the Patreon page, which we're working towards. One of them, we'll do another documentary.
Okay.
Probably not the Obama deception. I'm not sure. We'll figure it out. But we'll do another documentary if we reach that other goal.
All right.
And then the further goal, I'm calling my magnum opus. People have asked me to put out a book or write a book basically about this.
Yeah.
I don't want to do that. So I've come up with another form to put out the information I would put in a book. I'll start releasing it if we hit that goal. Probably start releasing it at some point anyway. But if we hit if we hit that goal, I will feel guilty if we haven't started. I'll put it that way.
All right.
So, anyone who supports the show, we really appreciate it. And if you don't and you want to help us work towards these goals, that would be great.
Yeah, that would be great.
So there's that. Anyway, Jordan, this has been fun. But.
What?
There's one thing that Alex Jones knew in 2009 that he is not being forthcoming about.
I can't think of anything.
And that is that he probably killed a dude.
Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
I love you.